This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Unfortunately, a chilly Saturday in the middle of April, but we are very pleased to be joined by Tom Schroyer as always. It is Minnesota Law Saturdays at noon, and we have a first-time guest on the program and a great topic for people that want to start their own business or expand their current business. This is a very important program, Tom.
Indeed, and also for individuals who are interested in helping out, you know, friends, family members, getting personal credit by personally guaranteeing the repayment of a bank loan or a consumer loan or financing transaction. Therese West, welcome, Therese.
Thank you, Tom. I'm happy to be here today. I appreciate being on the program. I do deal with personal guarantees frequently in my practice, and so I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk about some of the issues involved in those types of transactions.
Well, sure. It's an area of law that gets a little attention. I think people sign personal guarantees almost without thinking about them, maybe even without reading them in many cases, and they're really surprised to find out what it means to be on the hook for a personal guarantee. So we'll drill down on that topic here throughout the upcoming hour. I might introduce you, though, first, Therese, to our listeners by noting your background, being raised in Duluth, and then following the railroad line out to Moorhead and Williston, North Dakota, and then back to college at Moorhead State before you spent some time working as a controller and in the accounting area for a business.
I did. I worked for a small consulting firm for several years and had the good fortune of being involved in most aspects of that business, particularly managing the bank relationships and the cash flow and really the finances of that company. And so in my practice today, I find that virtually every day that experience helps me with counseling clients.
What a great background for the work you do. And Steve, Therese is a shareholder with Moss and Barnett who focuses her practice on business litigation with a particular emphasis on banking and financial transactions, though I will share with our audience that I'm very appreciative and grateful for Therese to taking the time to do the program today because she and I are working on an enormous, I should say ginormous case of great complexity down in Oklahoma involving commercial financial and business transactions. And so, Therese, I appreciate your doing the program today.
Thank you, Tom.
What is a personal guarantee? I know we had Kevin Bush on frequently here, I should say on a regular basis, to talk about warranties, which are, you know, in a way synonymous with guarantees. What's the difference between Kevin Bush's warranties under the Uniform Commercial Code and a personal guarantee such as we're going to be talking about today?
In a warranty claim, a party may have a direct claim against the party who gave them the warranty, a direct claim for breach of warranty. A guarantee is a promise by one person to answer for the debt of another, and in that regard, it is a collateral or secondary obligation as opposed to a primary obligation that involves three parties, the creditor, the debtor or the borrower, and, of course, the guarantor. So, again, that is a secondary or collateral obligation to the borrower's independent obligation to the creditor for the debt. In that context, the guarantor is only going to have to stand up and answer for the debt in the event that the borrower defaults on the primary debt and in accordance with the terms of the guarantee contract.
I would imagine in your practice you're seeing that these personal guarantees or financial guarantees, I should call them instead, are increasingly prevalent or maybe even pervasive given the heightened underwriting standards that lenders, banks, all kinds of lenders have to impose these days because of the recent experience with all the loans going bad in real estate and whatnot. And of course, we continue to read news reports about banks being financially stressed and challenged even 2 years out from the Great Recession. So is that the case? Are you seeing a lot of financial guarantees?
Yes, actually seeing a lot more litigation in the area of personal guarantees, and I think that reflects perhaps most of all in the business context, the declines in property values that have occurred over the last several years, and that oftentimes there is collateral security on a debt in the form of a mortgage against real property. When the value declines then and the creditor needs to collect, oftentimes the value of the property doesn't do it. And so in that context, the creditor will then turn to the guarantor to make up the deficiency.
I suppose it demonstrates my keen sense for the obvious to say that a lender, a bank, if you will, looks for a financial guarantee from a third party when they have some concern about wanting to be repaid.
Oh, absolutely. It's all a matter of risk. And a guarantee is a very serious business undertaking for both the creditor and the guarantor. All loans include some degree of risk. So a creditor entering into a guarantee transaction needs to be careful to structure guarantee documents so that they accomplish the goal of the creditor in getting to an acceptable level of risk in making the loan. On the flip side of things, the debtor should keep in mind that in the event the borrower defaults under that primary obligation, Minnesota law is typically going to require that guarantor to step up and do what he agreed to do.
And would that involve homes, vehicles, whatever assets that potentially you sign on the dotted line and you're personally guaranteeing? You're risking literally everything or potentially everything.
Well, you are to a certain degree. You certainly are doing that. There are protections under the law in terms of bankruptcy, also protections in terms of homestead exemptions on residential property. But generally, when you're guaranteeing debt for a loan, what can happen is the creditor can proceed against you to collect the debt. It can result in a judgment against you personally to collect the debt, and then can result in the creditor getting a writ of execution and executing it against your personal property. And so that's how that plays out. You can certainly end up in a position that you don't want to be in, but as I mentioned previously, the Minnesota law is going to require you to step up and agree what you agreed to do.
As I was mentioning, it seems to me that at least occasionally, maybe often, folks are frankly surprised when they've signed a personal guarantee, a financial guarantee, and they end up having to be financially responsible, and they think they have various defenses to that, but it turns out they've waived them all in what they signed. Do you see that sort of what I might call psychological denial in these cases, Therese?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I do. And I've been on the creditor side of several transactions in which the guarantor has been just astonished at the consequences of entering into a guarantee. Guarantees are contracts, and they are construed in accordance with any other contract. Guarantees are governed by the statute of frauds. They do need to be in writing to be enforceable. They also need to express consideration, and they need to be signed by the guarantor to be enforced against the guarantor. And that guarantee contract is going to define the terms of the obligations for a guarantor. And so to your point, Tom, it's very important for someone who's considering entering into a guarantee transaction to consult with legal counsel and make sure they understand the consequences of their action.
I imagine, too, that creditors want personal guarantees from the owners of a business, a corporation, or an LLC, and in either case where the business owner wouldn't have personal liability for the debts of the company unless they were on the hook for a personal guarantee, almost as a way of getting the business owner to be sure to be especially focused on making that debt repayment.
Yes, that's right. Asking an owner to guarantee business debt is a very common transaction. It is one that ensures that the owner has a stake in the business, isn't therefore motivated in its success. And as you mentioned, it does make the owner personally liable, notwithstanding the fact that the business may be a corporation, a limited liability company, or some other business entity that was formed under state statutes that limit liability. Just to be, you know, in terms of guarantees, though, they are very common in all kinds of respects. So we can talk a little bit more later about that.
We have a great program for you today. Therese West, On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees. Tom Schroyer is our host on the program. I think what we were talking about there, and I've heard this more than once, skin in the game. That's what we'll get back to in a moment.
Yes, very important thing.
All right. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
To fight the good fight. Did you know Minnesota rules recommend that licensed attorneys provide 50 hours each year of pro bono or free legal services to persons of limited means, the disadvantaged, or charities?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
News for Minnesota is heard on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. And for more info on the program, as always, go online, moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer in studio, Therese West, on the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees. By the way, if you have a question for Therese and Tom on the program today, here are the numbers, 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well. Great way to go, 81807. That's 81807, and that's powered by Home Service Plus, an offering of CenterPoint Energy. And Tom, we talked a little bit before the break about skin in the game, and the idea is that you sign on the line that's dotted and you commit to a personal guarantee. The expectation is that one way or another, the people giving that money will get paid back.
Precisely right. And of course, in that context, there are lots of wrinkles to exactly what the rights of the parties are, and they revolve, of course, in each case around both the actual wording of the personal guarantee or the financial guarantee, as well Minnesota case law. And Therese, before we jump into all of that, let me ask if there aren't many cases or occasions when a lender, a bank, might not require more than one personal guarantee, and what kind of complication that adds to the scenarios.
That is very common, that a bank will require more than one personal guarantee. In that regard, it's typical for a bank to require guarantees from all owners of a business, directors or officers. Again, it's that concept of skin in the game. In the co-guarantor context, unless the parties otherwise agree, a co-guarantor is not generally liable for more than his or her share of the debt. Guarantors may make an agreement amongst themselves to apportion guarantee liability based on a different type of arrangement other than on a strictly proportional basis, but generally they are liable for only their portion of the debt. Now, oftentimes in a guarantee transaction, which I mentioned previously is a contract, in terms of the guarantor's contract with the creditor will require the guarantor to be jointly and severally liable for the debt.
Does that mean liable for the whole debt?
Liable for the whole debt. All the guarantors are liable for the entire debt. They are also individually liable for the entire debt. And that's how a guaranteed transaction gets its security in terms of going against an individual party who might be in a better position to step up and take care of his guarantee obligations, as opposed to having to join others in the suit that maybe there is not such a good prospect of recovery. So it's an important tool for a creditor to manage his cost of collection.
So in other words, the deep pockets will get tapped in that case. If I have two or three partners and my other partners aren't very financially responsible and didn't save their money or set aside money or have assets to cover the debt, I could get stung if I were responsible and had pockets that were a little deeper than everybody else.
You could certainly and most likely will get stung under those circumstances. And there's a couple of aspects of that that are particularly interesting. One is that That type of an arrangement in a guarantee contract does reduce the creditor's cost of collection and thereby reduces the creditor's cost of providing you with or others with financing in the future. So it all sort of drills down into the cost of providing credit. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is that a guarantor, as a matter of common law, has a right of contribution against co-guarantors. If your co-guarantors don't have anything, you're not likely to recover against them. And when the bank goes against you and gets recovery on the loan, you could be stuck without any recourse for that. You are entitled to, of course, as a guarantor, reimbursement from the borrower. But in that context, there are some problems also in that the borrower may be bankrupt, maybe in just not a good financial condition to make good on his primary obligation, and therefore not in a good position to reimburse you for having to step up and, again, do what you said you were going to do.
So when you have multiple guarantees, when you have co-guarantors, what I'm hearing you say is that basically the bank or the creditor can take their pick as to whom they go after if they've structured the guarantees to be everybody, all for one and one for all under the law of joint and several liability, and then go after the deep pocket. And that leaves that person on the hook for the full amount and left to chase the other folks.
Yes, that kind of a structure, which is joint and several liability, does permit a creditor to circumvent disputes among co-guarantors. And again, it does reduce that cost of collection for the creditor.
We're going to go to the phone lines on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett. By the way, the number is 651-989-9226, toll-free 1-866-989-9226, and we have lines open for you. Today's topic, On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees. Therese West and Tom Schroyer in studio. Let's go to Dana. Dana in East Bethel, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. So I have a question. As a parent, I have co-signed for my child's loans, and he's graduated from college, and, you know, in this economy, he's not gotten a job in his field, and he's been unable to make his payments. And I, as the co-signer, have now become the person responsible for all these loan payments. And my question is, what can I do to maybe consolidate or do something? Because now I don't have the money, per se, to make all these payments, and it's my credit that's getting affected, not his.
And absolutely, that it's a good question. The typical one of the typical guarantee transactions in the consumer context is where a parent guarantees debt for a minor child. And oftentimes the reason for that is that the minor has no established credit history. In addition, the financing contract is voidable at the minor's option, so a creditor is not likely to make a loan unless it's guaranteed by someone like a parent who has the capacity to contract and an established credit history. And in your situation, you are going to be required to step up and meet your guarantees. But I would encourage you to consult legal counsel. The thing about it is that your creditor likely wants to collect that debt and so may be willing to work with you to restructure it in some manner that gets the creditor paid and also gives you some relief.
I might add quickly to the listener, thanks for calling in again, that as John Rossman, who's been on our program a number of times, points out, there are legal aid opportunities available through Hennepin County and Ramsey County where people can go get information about how to respond in situations like this. And certainly the caller's idea about perhaps contacting the debtors to consolidate a monthly payment would be a great way to go.
And we have more on the way, including another call. Of course, On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees in the spotlight today. Therese West in studio. Tom Schroyer is our host. We call it Minnesota Law. It comes your way each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett. Tom Schroyer is our host. Therese West, the topic on the hook, the law of personal guarantees. And if you have a question for Therese or Tom today, feel free to call the program 651-989-9226, toll free 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well. 81807 is the number. And that is powered by Home Service Plus, an offering of CenterPoint Energy. We'll start with Jerry. Jerry, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. I have a question regarding consideration. I understand that when one signs a guarantee, consideration is required or the guarantee may not be valid. I think the exception, my question is, when a parent signs for a son or daughter, that would be an exception to the rule. Can you speak to that?
That's the question about consideration is a great one, Jerry. And there is a requirement under the statute of frauds that not only the guarantee contract be in writing, but that it express the consideration for it. And the concept of consideration does apply in a parent-child type guarantee contract in the sense that it is adequate consideration. The inducement for the creditor to grant credit is adequate consideration for that. And so under those circumstances, you are making, as a parent, you're making a promise that you will stand in for that debt.
So maybe, Therese, to clarify a little bit, I'm thinking that what you're saying is that the consideration for the financial guarantee is supplied by the loan itself, even though none of the benefit directly goes to the guarantor.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And so that's always the consideration for a personal guarantee when, for example, somebody doesn't have, as we were saying earlier, skin in the game personally from the transaction.
That's right. In a family member context, it's a situation, for example, in that Tom may be willing to loan Betty money in the event John agrees to guarantee payment of the debt but won't do it otherwise. And so that type of a contract is supported by sufficient consideration.
But the caller, the question was terrific because it does go to a key point in these situations and also brings us back to one of the foundations of this topic, and that is that really this is another way to spell or to say contract, that a personal guarantee, a financial guarantee is a contract.
That's right. It is another way to say that. And there are defenses available to guarantors to having to make good on their guarantee. Guarantors, by and large, typically will waive those defenses under at least the standard guarantee contracts that I deal with in my practice for the most part.
So, but Therese, is that fair? Does the law allow them to work that way, where the lender just loads up all of these waivers of legal rights in the personal guarantee, and is that effective?
It is. It certainly is effective. Oftentimes, guarantee contracts, particularly in a business context, do have waivers of all defenses except for actual payment of the underlying debt. Those types of guarantees are enforced. And again, it goes back to what we talked about previously, where there's a very serious transaction that the guarantor is entering into, and he or she needs to be clear about what his or her obligations are under those guarantee contracts and what defenses might be available to him or her. It may be that there aren't any.
Can these guarantees go on forever?
Guarantees are unlimited or that don't express an expiration date in the guarantee contract are not indefinite, with one exception, which we'll talk about in a bit. But indefinite guarantees, so to speak, are construed by Minnesota courts to be for a reasonable duration, a reasonable amount of time. And one court, it's a fact question. It's one that depends on the circumstances of the case, but at least one Minnesota court has held that 3 years was a reasonable amount of time for a business guarantee to remain in force. The exception that I mentioned just a moment ago is a very important one. It permits a guarantee to continue indefinitely as long as the guarantee contract contains the right of revocation by the guarantor.
What do you mean?
The guarantee contract will contain a provision that entitles the guarantor to provide notice to the creditor that he or she revokes their guarantee. It is a prospective revocation only. It only applies to future debt, but it does terminate that sort of indefinite obligation on the part of the guarantor. And so it is the right, it is the right of revocation in a guarantee contract that makes that guarantee indefinite. That right puts the onus on the guarantor to be the one to take the action to terminate a guarantee.
I imagine it would be really critically important for, say, a shareholder or a partner in a business to have a right of revocation on the indebtedness if, for example, there's any prospect that they might sell their shares or sell their interest in the business and thus have no reason to stick around and keep guaranteeing the company's ongoing debt.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a Minnesota case that's quite pertinent in that regard. In that case, a financing company had provided a company with financing for many years. The terms, of course, require that all shareholders guarantee the debt, which is common in those transactions. The guarantee was absolute and continuing. In other words, the guarantor was on the hook regardless of any defenses that it might otherwise have had except for actual payment of the underlying debt. A 6% shareholder of the company at some point sold his stock back to the company and left. And, of course, you might imagine what happened thereafter. The company went on to incur additional debt, and then when it defaulted, the financing company turned to that guarantor for payment. The guarantor argued, I'm not a shareholder anymore, and so my guarantee is extinguished. In that case, the guarantee contract contained a revocation provision. The guarantor simply forgot to or neglected to provide written notice of termination of his guarantee, and he was on the hook.
So he had to, as it were, pay for the whole kit and caboodle, even though he had sold out his stock quite a while before.
Not necessarily, but I'm assuming under the guarantee contract at issue in that case, it was joint and several liability. He may have had a right of contribution against co-guarantors or have been able to recover against the company. But under the concept of joint and several liability, which was likely written into the contract in that case, he certainly was liable for the entire amount of the debt, both on an individual and jointly with other co-guarantors.
I imagine that exercising that right of revocation, though, could come with some consequences if the bank or other lender doesn't like it.
Well, oftentimes lenders will contain a provision in their loan documents that recall that a guarantor is required to step up upon default of the borrower. And so oftentimes what will happen is the creditor will include a term in its loan contract that upon revocation by one or more guarantors, the loan is in default. That gives the creditor the right to accelerate debt. And the creditor can then collect against all guarantors for the entire amount of debt owing at that time. So it is a way to get to the collection.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Today on the program, On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees, Therese West, Tom Schroyer in studio. Our phone lines are open for you if you have a question about our topic today. 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Here on News Radio, 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
How did you become a lawyer? Did you know the Minnesota rules for admission to practice law require that a person attend an accredited law school and pass a 2-day bar examination?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
All sides of the story are covered here. Award-winning news from News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Schroyer is our host. Therese West in studio. On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees, Tom.
Thanks, Steve. We're here with Therese West, a business litigation attorney and shareholder with Moss and Barnett, and talking about financial guarantees in under the law. Therese, we've been talking about the elements that are required to establish and then enforce a personal guarantee. Sometimes, though, these situations involve more than one loan, and they can have complex cross-default positions that can lead to some really unbelievable results.
That's right, Tom. There is a recent case that was decided by the Minnesota Court of Appeals that's a particularly good example of the consequences of a personal guarantee. And in that case, the owners of a real estate investment company had personally guaranteed a payment of their company's line of credit and also gave the bank, in that case, a mortgage on their lake home to secure payment of the debt. The bank in that case had financed several other real estate ventures for this same company. The line of credit document contained what's called a cross-default provision, and under that type of provision, the default in any other loan constituted a default under the line of credit and also gave the bank the right to go ahead with foreclosure on that lake home. The guarantees in that case contained what are called cross-liability provisions that essentially extended the guarantee to all debt that the company owed to the bank, and that is also a typical provision that I see in my practice. The company, of course, you can imagine what happened. The company defaulted on the line of credit and other loans. The amount owing on the line of credit was, and in fact, the amount owing and the entire amount was at dispute in the case. But the amount owing under that line of credit was in the $2,500 range. The company owed the bank about $1.2 million on all other loans. So, of course, the bank started an action against the guarantors to collect the entire amount due. The guarantors naturally attempted to escape the obligations of their guarantee, and the court hit by arguing that because they had satisfied the line of credit, that their guarantee should be discharged and the foreclosure action against the lake home should be stopped. Court said, no, under the plain terms of those documents, the discharge of the guarantee and extinguishing that mortgage would be done only in the event the company's entire debt to the bank was satisfied. So that is a particularly good example of the really serious consequences that come from a guarantee. And I think that case teaches one to really be careful about the transactions that one enters into, and also to be sure and seek legal advice.
We have more on the way. Minnesota Law wraps up in a moment. On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees. Tom Schroyer, along with Therese West, here on Minnesota Law. By the way, for more info on today's program and all our other programs, go online, moss-barnett.com. We'll be back in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
WCCO.com.
Welcome back one more time on the program. The hour's gone very quickly, and a lot of great information on the program. On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees. Therese West, Tom Schroyer.
Therese West, we wanted to cover one thing very quickly. A lot of times in these personal guarantee situations, the lender will want to have a spouse sign off as well with a personal guarantee. Is that always appropriate?
It is not appropriate in a case where a creditor is automatically requiring a spouse to sign off on a guarantee. And as I discussed previously, oftentimes in business transactions, the creditor, the terms of the guarantee will require the guarantor to waive all defenses except for actual payment. But there is a federal law, the Equal Opportunity Credit Act, which it's implementing regulation as Regulation B, so it's oftentimes referred to as a Reg B. Issue. Regulation B prohibits a creditor from discriminating against a loan applicant based on religion, race, age, and marital status, among other things. And so it does prevent a creditor from automatically requiring that a spouse guarantee payment. Although the regulation is written in the context of credit, it does apply equally to guarantees and certainly can be a big source for litigation when that's violated.
So in the old days, a lender would automatically get the spouse to sign on the dotted line with a financial guarantee because they wanted to cover all bases. Now that may not be legal. Are there ways, though, to nonetheless bind the spouse into a business loan deal with a personal guarantee?
There are a couple of ways that can be accomplished. If the guarantor doesn't have sufficient financial condition to provide the creditor with sufficient security for making the loan, the creditor may require the guarantor to either provide additional collateral or get the signature of a guarantor. While the creditor can't require that that additional guarantor be the guarantor's spouse, a spouse can certainly volunteer to be a guarantor, and that's just fine. Also, in terms of Regulation B, it does not prohibit a creditor from obtaining personal guarantees from officers, directors, and shareholders of companies, even if the business entity is creditworthy. So if a husband and wife own a business together, it is perfectly appropriate for the creditor to get a guarantee from both.
And in that case, the request for the guarantee is not from the spouse per se, but rather from another shareholder who happens to be a spouse.
Yes, the key is the relationship of that guarantor to the business.
And we are out of time. Great program today, Therese West. On the Hook, the Law of Personal Guarantees. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me today.
And Tom, next week.
We'll have Dave Singer and Cindy Ackerman will be reprising their program from earlier this year about the new federal estate tax laws, the impact on everyone, and a great program in terms of all the questions that were called in.
Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Saturdays at noon on 830 WCCO.